This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
How would you love a chance to save some money on car insurance? GEICO can help. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Tip of the cap to the National Guard. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koshenka, on this Memorial Day Monday, May 30th. Glad you could be with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
For nearly three decades after the collapse of the Soviet Union, members of California's National Guard have had a special relationship with Ukraine. We'll explain how.
How to tell if your child is financially literate, since schools aren't doing much of a job measuring it.
Famous quotes about heroism and gratitude for this Memorial Day.
And are we seeing the end of the men's dress shirt?
Companies like Indochino reporting that their dress shirt sales are up 191%. Companies like Proper Cloth reporting that they're up nearly 100%, you know, compared to a year ago.
Jacob Gallagher at the Wall Street Journal on the surprise return of collared button-ups. Well, leaders in Kyiv began reaching out to U.S. military officials for help soon after Russia rolled into Ukraine following a tense buildup along the border that lasted several months. One of the first calls went out to the California National Guard. For nearly 30 years after the demise of the Soviet Union, California's soldiers have had a close working relationship with Ukraine as part of the National Guard State Partnership Program. More from Mike Glenn, Pentagon reporter at the Washington Times. Mike, explain.
At the end of the Cold War, you had all these former countries in the Warsaw Pact, which, you know, the Soviet Union sort of controlled military, that really their connection to each other and to a larger country sort of dissolved. So the U.S., I think a pretty smart move. The U.S. moved in and said, we would, you know, we'll help you sort of develop your military into a more sort of Western-oriented force like us, you know, similar to the U.S. or the countries in Western Europe. So what they eventually did was basically divvy them up between the different states in the National Guard. So you would have like one, I don't have to completely, you know, break down, but you'd have like one state National Guard would sort of align itself with, say, Lithuania or something.
Okay.
And they would build these sort of army-to-army relationships over the years. Sometimes it would be, you know, the U.S. troops going over there to do a little training and to sort of assist and help them. And sometimes it would mean their troops coming back over to the United States to get some experience here.
What would you say, as a war veteran yourself,
right,
is the biggest help to Ukraine?
I think, well, they are actually, you know, in the last, you know, I don't know if you've been following the security assistance packages that have been coming from the U.S. and from Western Europe, they are getting close to, if you know, parity with Russia in the amount of firepower they have. So that's even not like so much as an issue now. But what they are, the benefit they have and what really sets them apart is from what I've been told is really their professionalism, their ability to fight a really agile operation compared to the Russians, who have been very, sort of plotting and one-dimensional. Like there's this famous, the famous image that everybody's seen of that long line of supply convoy coming down from the north toward Kyiv that essentially sat there for weeks and just getting picked off by the by the Ukrainians.
Yeah.
So it's the fact that they've built a professionalism into a Western-oriented army against a really, like you said, stolid and one-dimensional force that they're going up against. So it's that professionalism and that ability to fight a really modern war.
Well, we're speaking with Mike Glenn, Pentagon reporter at the Washington Times. His piece is called Ukraine's Battlefield Success, No Surprise to Their National Guard Trainers in the U.S. Is there any ego involved here? Like, does Ukraine at one point say, oh, come on, we don't need the U.S.'s help?
No, they have been very grateful for what they've received and very thankful for, both from the U.S. And from Western Europe. And they obviously want war. If you watch, President Zelensky, he's asking for all he can get. So I don't think they've ever, they've ever said, we've got this.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And then,
but they've never ever, they always say that we've got this if you help us with the sort of the tools we need. It's like the arsenal of democracy that the U.S. was in the early days of World War II.
Yeah, I guess, and I wanted to follow up too because you said the weaponry that we've given them has been hugely helpful and maybe almost on par in numbers with what Russia has, but that doesn't mean they necessarily have all the bodies they need to man that stuff, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, they've still, it's still a numbers game, and Russia still has simply larger raw numbers, and that does mean something. But smaller armies can hold off larger numbers if they're employed more intelligently, as Israel's example with its neighbors over the years has shown.
Yeah.
That simply because you have fewer raw numbers not necessarily mean you're going to lose as, there are a lot of people didn't, it's one of the points of the story. A lot of really big thinkers here in D.C. really did not give them much, Ukraine much of a chance to hold out against the Russians. But, the California Guard was telling them, these guys are better than you think. And, and their optimism, at least to this point now, has really seemed to have borne fruit.
Thanks, Mike. Mike Glenn, Pentagon reporter at The Washington Times. Coming up next, measuring financial literacy. It's the perfect season for a powerful business upgrade with Dell Technologies summer sale event. Save up to 45% on secure PCs built for business with Windows 10 Pro. You'll also find great savings on Dell servers, monitors, docks, and other accessories to help boost productivity. Plus, enjoy free shipping on everything. Take the lead with Windows 10 Pro devices. Call 877-ASK-DELL for a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL for business specials during Dell's summer sale event. Thanks for spending part of your holiday with us. We apparently need more financial literacy. CNBC reports just 57% of Americans are financially literate, and only 12 states require students to take a personal finance class to graduate high school. That leaves it largely up to parents. Here's guidance from Chris Carosa, author of The Parent's Guide to Turning Your Teen into a Millionaire. Chris, what should we know?
Well, I don't know that the adults are any better off than the kids, because there's no financial literacy training anywhere. I mean, there are some states that sort of require it, but, who knows how good it really is.
What couple of questions do you ask somebody and then you immediately know that they're not financially literate?
So, for example, a lot of people, they're always looking at their account. They want to know how much money they made today or how much money they lost today. Well, they don't want to know how much they lost. They're assuming they're always making money. This is if they're invested in the market. And the markets don't work that way. The markets are long term. It's not something where it's not like a basketball game where they're scoring every few seconds. Mm. It's something that it's long and deliberate. And you need to have some patience. And that's the biggest problem, is that people don't have patience. And as a result, sometimes they make bad decisions. They make mistakes.
What's the best way for parents to, say, kick off that conversation with, a kid as young as 5 or 7, pick the age?
Well, the younger the kid, if the child's like 5 years old or something like that, play a game with them. Play Monopoly. Play the game of life. These are games that they have money as part of the game. And the winners, really, the scoring is based on how much money you accumulate.
What should, at the very least, kids in high school say, know like the back of their hand financially? What are the basics they should know?
They should know that they should never spend more money than what they have. That's probably the most important thing. It's the foundation of all financial discipline, which is required. And it also helps to know basic math. I mean, and I don't mean calculus or trigonometry or maybe, to some extent even algebra, just basic math, just adding and subtracting. because that's really what budgeting is all about. You're adding and subtracting. You're adding the income that you've got, and you're subtracting out your expenses. And that kind of helps, it helps the child understand that, you know, money doesn't grow on trees, for want of a better term.
Yeah.
And that's really most important. The other part, you know, the part about long-term and investing, that's a little bit more advanced. And like I said, it's the parent is going to know more about that than the child. And the parent could probably put themselves in a position to kind of help push the children along, you know, towards the right decisions when it comes to that. So when the child finally matures in terms of understanding money, they'll be able to appreciate what the parent did.
How come this is not in all schools, this kind of teaching?
That's a great question. I mean, a lot of people are asking that question. And, you know, there's a couple of good reasons for it. First of all, think about it in terms of adults. You know, adults don't have this financial confidence. I won't even call it literacy. I'll call it money confidence. And teachers are no different than other adults. And unless the teachers are trained in this, you know, how confident are they going to be teaching children about this? Mm. So there's that barrier or obstacle to overcome. But then, you know, to be honest, within the education system, there's a limited amount of time that you could teach anything. And everybody is fighting for that time. All these subject matters are fighting for that time. And there's really been no advocate for finance.
Yeah.
And, you know, without a champion, it gets deprioritized. It gets replaced by something else. So there's a lot of pressure, you know, social pressure against it. Not against it, but it just no real proponents for it. And they figure, you know, by the time you need to understand it, you will either have learned it or you won't, which is too bad, because I think kids are great incubators of what we'll call capitalism. I mean, kids would love to make money. If they knew how to make money, they would love to make money.
Mm.
So it's almost like what you should do is you should teach kids how to run their own business. Forget about teaching money in the way that maybe a textbook would teach it. Teach it hands-on. And there are programs that do that.
Thanks, Chris. Chris Carosa, author of The Parent's Guide to Turning Your Teen into a Millionaire. Coming up next, a men's fashion update.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Glad you could be with us on this Memorial Day. During the work-from-home era, men turn their backs on stifling dress shirts, but collared button-ups have surprisingly returned with a twist. Here's this morning's Jennifer Koschenka.
Is the dress shirt dead? Not quite. Jacob Gallagher of the Wall Street Journal is here with a story. Jacob, what happened to the way we dressed during the early stages of the pandemic?
Well, obviously, a lot of our formal, you know, quote-unquote business clothing went away. You know, I think that there's perhaps a misconception that everyone just deviated into sweatpants and wearing, you know, boxer shorts while they were sitting doing Zoom calls. But what really happened was effectively that, you know, suits and the kind of highest high of formality disappeared. But by and large, in particular, when I would interview folks during that kind of first year or so during the pandemic, they would say things like, you know, I've worn the same dress shirt for a week straight, or, you know, I've continued to just go through a rotation of 3 to 5 shirts every day that I put on. And, you know, sometimes they'll take them off, you know, in between calls and just wear a T-shirt. But, you know, kind of that mid-tier of business wear endured, and men were still wearing, you know, button-up shirts of kind of that classic business variety. But what I was curious about was, you know, during that time, men were wearing these shirts that were pretty much already existing in their closet, you know. And I'm saying men because, you know, I think that the dress shirt is kind of most widely associated with the male wardrobe. It's kind of that staple piece there. And for the most part, they were just grabbing ones that they already had.
All right. And Jacob, what did you find?
What I found was really that the market has bounced back significantly in the past year or so. you know, companies like Indochino reporting that their dress shirt sales are up 191%, companies like Proper Cloth reporting that they're up nearly 100%, you know, compared to a year ago. And it was interesting, there, some of that is attributed to this idea of pent-up energy, which is something that we've heard a lot in kind of the fashion space over the past few months. People having some level of excitement about getting back to work, getting back out there into, you know, seeing people in person, they want to buy something new. And oftentimes that has seemingly manifest in buying simply just dress shirts. You know, maybe the shirts you've worn or have, you've outgrown them, or maybe they're too stained, or maybe they just don't look right anymore to you and you want something different. So by and large, men are buying dress shirts again. It's not like, you know, suits or ties, which are markets that we think, you know, and the data kind of backs this up, there's some evidence that they're kind of as wobbly as they've been over the past couple of years.
We're speaking with Jacob Gallagher of the Wall Street Journal. Now, your story talks about, I thought it was interesting that many of these shirts will not be tucked in. What did you find that companies say about what men are looking like?
You know, it's tough. I think that corporate dress codes are something we try to track and we try really hard to extract some larger thesis from, but every company is quite different. You know, I believe it was Goldman Sachs that a few years ago said they were going to let, you know, their associates wear jeans. They were going to let them, you know, forego ties, forego suits, dress more casually in that sense. But the other thing to keep in mind is that one of the largest industries in America, the tech industry, has almost never had a dress code. And it's kind of predicated upon this idea that you don't dress a particular way, that you don't need to ever wear a suit. You know, I think the only time Mark Zuckerberg or Jack Dorsey ever wear suits is when they appear in front of Congress, really. You know, they're not going even to shareholder meetings necessarily wearing suits. And that, I think, has had a real strong effect of bleeding over into other industries that want to masquerade or want to present themselves, if you will, as being hip or on the cutting edge. You know, you can look at even a lot of media moguls or a lot of, you know, even banking moguls these days. They are foregoing the tie. They're leaving their shirt untucked. They're trying to appear a bit more like a man of the people, if you will. I think that this is actually something that will become even more prevalent and something that will become more, we'll see that more across industries as, you know, inflation continues to rise and Americans go through further economic hardship. You know, these people that make a lot of money at the top of these companies are not going to want to be wearing $10,000 suits and $1,000 ties and $2,000 shoes when they go in public. They're going to probably want to downplay their wealth.
That's this morning's Jennifer Koshenka with Wall Street Journal men's fashion columnist Jacob Gallagher. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Want to eat healthier, but every supplement you've ever tried seems like the better it is for you, the worse it tastes? Then you have to try AG1 from Athletic Greens. I started taking AG1 because I wanted more energy and better gut health. What I didn't expect, the taste is better than any supplement I've ever had. I drink it, like it says, before anything else when I wake up. I guzzle those 8 to 10 ounces before my coffee and start my day knowing I've already gotten the recommended daily intake of all the good fruits and veggies. There's definitely a mental boost knowing you've started the day off on the right foot. I tackle the day now with more confidence and energy. AG1, by the way, is not only lifestyle friendly, it's cheaper than getting all the different supplements yourself. Try AG1. I love this product. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/Gordon. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/Gordon to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. athleticgreens.com/Gordon. Thanks for spending part of your Memorial Day with us. Monday, May 30th, Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Coming up this half hour, calculating your personal rate of inflation. Also, the hottest new perk in corporate America today. Plus, demand for comfort food on the rise and patriotic Memorial Day quotes. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. Well, you've been hearing this for some time now. Inflation is at the highest level in 4 decades. However, how you experience it can vary greatly depending on what you eat, how much you travel, and your other spending habits. Ben Castleman, economics reporter at the New York Times, examined ways to estimate your personal inflation rate. Ben, what did you put together?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, we all know inflation is at a 40-year high. You know, depending on your specific spending patterns, you could experience much faster or much slower inflation than that.
So, for example, the cost of fuel way up, but, you know, if you don't drive that much, you've got an electric vehicle, maybe you're not that impacted.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm a classic example of this, right? I live in Brooklyn. I don't own a car. You know, I don't drive much. I don't have to pay for my heating bill, you know, et cetera. And so my rate of inflation is a lot lower.
If you're a clothes junkie, you might only be paying 2.5%. But if you buy a ton of clothes, I guess it starts to add up.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing, is the way our inflation rate is calculated is based on averages of how much the population as a whole spends on different things. So, yeah, I mean, you know, the average household spends 2.5% on clothes, but you might spend much more than that. You know, you might spend much less than that, and you know, then you're going to experience a different rate of inflation.
We're speaking with Ben Castleman, economics reporter at the New York Times. They've got a piece running called What's Your Rate of Inflation? How about factoring in where and what you eat?
Yeah, I mean, so if you, and this is a little bit surprising, I think, in some ways, grocery prices are up significantly more than restaurant prices over the last year. So obviously, even though you're going to save money by eating in terms of inflation, if you're somebody who eats out all the time, you're actually probably experiencing a little bit less inflation. Meat prices are also way up, as anybody who's bought meat recently knows. And so, you know, hey, if you're a vegetarian or better yet a vegan, you're probably experiencing a little bit of less inflation than the carnivores out there.
What about factoring in paying for school, all kinds of school, as you mapped out?
Yeah, so this is, you know, a funny thing that I think helps illustrate, you know, so what's a little bit, you know, tricky about thinking about individual rates of inflation. You know, school, you know, private school, daycare, college, obviously enormous expenses for any household that's paying for those things. But they have not gone up as much in price as, you know, meat or as gas, some of these other things we're talking about. And so from a straight understanding how much your cost of living has gone up standpoint, you're actually experiencing less inflation if you're paying for those things, even though obviously it's a huge chunk out of your budget.
Yeah. I was trying to map out by using all your drop-down boxes who's experienced the least inflation, right? And it generally comes down to you didn't buy a car, maybe you have an electric car you never drive, you don't vacation, you're a vegetarian, right? All these things, and you could keep it to around maybe 5.5%. Who's paying the most, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, it's no surprise here, right? Somebody who's bought a car, who spends a lot on fuel, both for their home and for their car, you know, they're going to experience the most. You know, what that means, of course, is that it's really biting people who are living in rural areas, who have to drive a ton. You know, and of course, those are things that in many cases you can't avoid very well. You know, maybe you could choose to put off buying the car for a little bit, but, you know, you probably can't put off the trip to the grocery store. You probably can't put off the daily commute. And so, you know, those are things that are pretty tough to get away from.
Yeah. All right. So this isn't for everybody necessarily, but you can't ignore the housing these days.
Yeah. I mean, housing prices obviously are a crazy situation. You know, this is another tricky one, right? If you're a homeowner, you've got a fixed rate mortgage, you know, a rise in the home value is actually good news for you, right? It's not raising your monthly housing expenditures. Hey, maybe you refinanced the last couple of years. You kind of missed your window on that now, right? But if you've done it in the last couple of years, you may be paying less in housing every month. On the other hand, if you know, have had to sign a new, you're a renter, you've had to sign a new lease recently, especially, you know, somewhere like, you know, New York or Austin, where rents are way up, you know, then you could be experiencing just dramatically more increased cost of living, more inflation.
Thanks, Ben. Ben Castleman, economics reporter at the New York Times. Coming up next, from emergency benefits to permanent ones at work.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Thanks for spending some time with us. More than 2 years on from the pandemic, companies are shifting from rolling out emergency benefits to implementing permanent support. Today, the American workplace is undergoing a seismic shift, the likes of which has not been seen since World War II. It's a story by Megan Lenhart, senior writer at Fortune. Megan, set the scene.
So it's interesting. Our number one company, Cisco, actually sat there and they have these things called Day for Me. And what it is essentially is an additional paid vacation day to help workers really prioritize self-care. It's a company-wide holiday. So unlike when you or I take a day off and we have so much work that we miss while we're out, this is actually something where the entire company is off. So you don't feel like you're missing work. You don't feel like you have to sit there and jump on emails that you're missing, things of that nature. And they've actually put this into place as a formal program. And so they have had, I think, 8 days so far with an additional 3 planned for 2022.
How about that? And it's like an anxiety, right, that's seems to be driving people toward these days off.
It is. And we've seen, you know, this across the board, companies really trying to figure out how to make sure people are actually stepping away from work, especially as work has come into our homes, our kitchens, our living rooms, you name it. It feels like we just really have to make sure that we're purposefully creating that work-life balance. And sometimes, of course, it's really hard to do as an employee. Sometimes that means the employer has to take a little bit more of an active role to say, hey, we need to make sure that we're protecting your time off. So actually, ORIC, which is a law firm, actually has encouraged its employees to take unplugged time and to make sure that partners and other folks who are sort of eligible for the bonus time and sort of those hours that they need to get in, they've actually made it so that they can take this time as well and not have to worry about their billable hours during these unplugged times that they take.
Wow. We're speaking with Megan Lenhart, writer at Fortune.com. Her piece is called The Hottest New Perk in Corporate America, Pay Your Employees to Stop Working. What about the David Weekley Homes that you cited? I think they were number 9 on the list.
They were number 9 on the list. I actually think David Weekley Homes does something that's very interesting, and they give paid sabbaticals. And so there's about 18 of our companies this year that do have some sort of paid sabbatical program. For David Weekley Homes, they actually sit there and provide, you know, a number of financial and well-being benefits. But the sabbaticals are actually anywhere between 4 and 6 weeks. And after you've been with the company for 10 years, you're eligible to take this. And they'll even give you a $2,000 grant to help you pay for, you know, some of the travel or expenses that come with these kind of experiences.
Wow. How about Accenture and the metaverse they use?
It was really interesting. So one of the other trends, in addition to making sure that, you know, we're providing for employee well-being and sort of that holistic approach, is really coming to terms with remote work and sort of that flexibility that we all need to sort of have in order to collaborate across offices, across time zones these days, you name it. And so Accenture actually is leading the way and sitting there and creating corporate metaverses, which is really kind of interesting. So they started building out theirs last year, and I think they had something like 11,000 last year. This fiscal year, they're on track to hit, I think, 150,000 of their employees working, collaborating, meeting in the metaverse, which is really, really exciting. And so they actually have it set up so that not only can current employees use it to go into actually digital twins of their physical offices and have meetings and things like that.
Thanks, Megan. Megan Lenhart, senior writer at Fortune. Coming up next, fried food. High interest debt can put you into a financial hole, and a lot of people are too embarrassed to ask for help. That's where Upstart comes in. Upstart can help you get one fixed monthly payment with a clear payoff date, whether it's for paying off credit cards, consolidating high interest debt, or funding personal expenses. You can even receive funds in as fast as one business day, from $1,000 to $50,000. And checking your rate at Upstart has to be the easiest process ever invented. The questions are simple, the drop-down boxes are user-friendly, and the application took less than 5 minutes. In addition, all your responses are encrypted and do not affect your credit score, so you have complete security and privacy. Don't wait. Check your rate today at upstart.com/Gordon. That's upstart.com/Gordon to check your rate today. Don't forget to use our URL to let them know we sent you. Loan amounts will be determined based on your credit, income, and certain other information provided in your loan application. Again, upstart.com/Gordon. Thanks for spending part of your Memorial Day with us. Fried food, as you know, is one of our oldest obsessions. Well, the pandemic took that to a deeper level. Annie Gasparo, reporter at the Wall Street Journal, says more people are ordering French fries with their fast food and seeking solace in fried chicken. Annie, what's trending?
During the pandemic, people really started gravitating more toward fried chicken, French fries, just these real comfort foods. We all needed that reassurance and that feeling of nostalgia of like back when things were not so scary in life.
Even menu options are expanding these days with fried food options.
Yeah, the restaurants really figured, you know, one way to get people in would be offering more fried food because that's something, you know, most of us don't have deep fryers at home. So this was a way to offer people a comfort food that they usually can't make for themselves. And that would bring them out to a restaurant at a time when it was hard to get people to go to restaurants. And we saw the impacts of that because restaurant deep fryer repair orders nearly doubled in the pandemic because of overuse of their deep fryers.
As you referenced, we may not have them at home, these deep fryers. However, we do seem to have air fryers these days.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Everybody is getting air fryers. It's up to like over 40% of U.S. households have an air fryer. And people are using them for everything from cauliflower to pork tenderloins to, you know, bagel bites. It's just everything. It gets that crispy, crunchy feeling of fried food without all the messy, hot grease. And that's made them really popular.
I know you talked to Ellsworth Cooperative Creamery in Ellsworth, Wisconsin. What'd they say about these cheese curds?
Yes, that's one of those, you know, fried foods that people aren't usually making at home, so they're ordering them at restaurants more and more. And so he just said they're going like gangbusters. All these companies preparing them for restaurants, and the French fries also, the fry attachment rate is something that these restaurants look at, and it calculates what percentage of people are adding French fries to their fast food or restaurant orders. And that metric has gone up in the pandemic also.
We're speaking with Annie Gasparo, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. I know large doses are not good for you, this fried stuff. However, there's a slight benefit, right? It affects serotonin in some way.
Yes. It, you know, nutritionists hate to endorse fried food or comfort food that's not healthy for your body, but they do say it's healthy for your mind. It really does have a chemical effect on the body that can ease depression and anxiety. And so there's a reason that we crave it in times of uncertainty or, you know, scary times. It's not crazy. It's true. It makes us feel better.
Thanks, Annie. Annie Gasparo, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Coming up next, some famous Memorial Day quotes. It's the perfect season for a powerful business upgrade with Dell Technologies Summer Sale Event. Save up to 45% on secure PCs built for business with Windows 10 Pro. You'll also find great savings on Dell servers, monitors, docks, and other accessories to help boost productivity. Plus, enjoy free shipping on everything. Take the lead with Windows 10 Pro devices. Call 877-ASK-DELL for a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL for business specials during Dell's summer sale event. Well, we'll finish with this. Today, Americans across the country will celebrate the brave servicemen and servicewomen who died defending our country. Parade.com gathered a list of the most dignified and patriotic Memorial Day quotes. Here are some of them. Number one, As we express our gratitude, we must never forget that the highest appreciation is not to utter the words, but to live by them. Wise words from John F. Kennedy. Number two, from Calvin Coolidge, who said, quote, heroism is not only in the man, but in the occasion. Teddy Roosevelt gave us number three, quote, never throughout history has a man who lived a life of ease left a name worth remembering. Number four, quote, for those who have long enjoyed such privileges as we enjoy, forget in time that men have died to win them, from Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Number five, General Douglas MacArthur said, quote, no man is entitled to the blessings of freedom unless he be vigilant in its preservation. And number six, from Eleanor Roosevelt, who gave us, quote, freedom makes a huge requirement of every human being. With freedom comes responsibility. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. How would you love a chance to save some money on car insurance? GEICO can help. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save.